The Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 72, How It's Gotta Be Review.
Welcome to The Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to The Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of The Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another fine episode of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
I'm Ben.
And I'm Laura.
And you may have already guessed, but speaking of guessing or guessed and guesting, we have two guest hosts again. Both of them are returning guest hosts. So, Ben, you were on here for actually the season premiere.
Yeah, I'm kind of bookending this first half of the season. I got the season premiere, and now I got the mid-season finale.
I thought that would be kind of interesting to do, so when I was booking things. And your network and podcasts?
Well, I have the Next Level Podcast Network, which I am a co-founder of, which is now up to 11 different podcasts, two of which I am the co-host on, first being DC Primetime, which talks about all of the Arrowverse television shows every week, and the Showcast Spotlight, which is our celebrity interview podcast. And that's nextlevelradioonline.com. Everything can be found there.
Cool. And Laura, you were actually here for the season finale of Fear. Was it the week before? Yeah, I guess it was the week
maybe,
before.
I think there was 1 week in between the two. Was it? Maybe not.
No, I think I think it was right after came The Walking Dead. So.
Right.
You've been a longtime listener, and your feedback is always awesome. And you especially had a lot to say about the Fear season finale. So anyway, thanks both of you for coming on tonight. And we are here to discuss season 8, episode 8 of The Walking Dead, which is titled How It's Gotta Be, written by David Leslie Johnson and Angela Kang, and directed by Michael E. Satrazimus. All right, so it's time to hear Shane and news ratings info.
There's a couple weird stories on the news.
And errata, but we don't have any errata today, at least that I know of. And if there is, then we'll hear it later. And anyway, and I don't have any major things about the episode other than the obvious thing. So I'm going to skip right into ratings. And I've got ratings for two episodes this time, because last time we didn't have any ratings yet for season 8, episode 7, Time for After. So to compare ratings, we'll start with the previous week, which was a 3.57 in the 18 to 49 with 8.282 million viewers. And that was for season 8, episode 6, The King, The Widow, and Rick, which, by the way, was my least favorite episode of the half season. Time for After went quite a bit down to like season lows, and for that matter, the low from like way back in season 2. That's where you got to go back to find ratings of this low magnitude. 3.28 in the 18 to 49 for Time for After with 7.468 million viewers.
That was my least favorite of the season.
Yeah. It was close for me, but this past episode, the mid-season finale, season 8, episode 8, How It's Gotta Be, got a 3.36 in the 18 to 49 with 7.885 million viewers. So it was right in the middle. But if you look at the charts that you'll see on the Facebook page and are in these show notes, you'll see a very disturbing thing. If you look at that green chart in the 18 to 49, it has dipped below season 2 at this point. Now, it's not that's at a relative point, episode 8 versus episode 8, but Yeah. The lines have crossed in both the total viewers and the 18-49. So that's not good at all.
Did I read something that this is one of the or if not the lowest rated mid-season finales the show has had? I thought I had read something about that earlier.
Yeah, that could actually be the case. Certainly, I hadn't looked for that, but that's a good point. The season two, the season finale, was on episode 7. So you have to compare that to episode 7. But looking at the charts, yeah, it does look like it was lower, at least on the 18-49. It looks like it was higher on the total viewers, but lower on the 18-49 rating. So
I found the article. It's actually the lowest in 6 years.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good at all. And it's kind of funny because, you know, some people are saying, you know, Gimple needs to go, and Gimple's not going. In fact, Gimple is going to extend his grip on the universe because he's not the showrunner for Fear the Walking Dead coming up, but he is strongly advising them. So
now, what is his official role? Isn't it executive producer?
The whole thing with executive producer, it's weird as far as the credits. There's a bunch of executive producers, and by that, it's hard to tell who is the person, but it's usually the last executive producer that you see in the credits is the showrunner. It's not always the case, but more often than not, that's what it means. So in the case of Scott M. Gimple on The Walking Dead, he is executive producer, but he is considered showrunner. And I'm doing air quotes when I do that. And that just basically means he's the guy both in charge of the writing staff and the production staff. So he's like the guy everything goes through.
And it's so funny how some people want Scott M. Gimple's head on a pike, and we'll get into this later too, but I want to pin the medal on the man.
It's in a lot of shows, and including coming with Fear this season, it's going to be two people. Game of Thrones, that's Benioff and Weiss. So the trend for a lot of shows is co-showrunner. So Better Call Saul has that. Star Trek Discovery has that. Game of Thrones has that, et cetera, et cetera. They've been splitting it up. So Gimple is kind of the old style where it's just one person. To me, that's a lot of work for one person.
Especially for two shows.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he's not show running the,
that's true.
He's not show running Fear. So he's,
but I'm sure he's got some input there.
I would say he's probably got heavy story input. I'll be curious to see if he's got any, you know, writing credits on Fear come season 4. Anyway, Talking Dead, the ratings for that. And again, starting with the season 8, episode 6 ratings, just to compare. And that was the week that they announced the crossover of spoiler Morgan, if anybody hasn't been paying attention, which
the Talking Dead's worst kept secret.
Yeah, I know. That week it got a 1.32 in the 18-49 with 3.219 million viewers. The last season 8 episode 7 a week ago, that got a 1.16 with 2.75 million. And for this past week, it got a 1.35 in the 18-49 with 3.359 million viewers. So my take on that is that a lot of people after the ending decided to stay on to hear what Gimple and the rest of them had to say about it. They needed time to process. All right. As far as news, we just have two items, and one I'm expecting some comment from you guys since we didn't get to talk about it yet. First of all, it was announced on Talking Dead that season 8B returns Sunday, February 25th, which was actually surprising for me because I was fully expecting it to come back February 11th. However, because normally that's when it would come back, is like the second Sunday in February, but
Valentine's Day.
Right. It always comes around Valentine's Day. But in this particular year, the Winter Olympics is going on at the same time. Now, this is not the first time that The Walking Dead could potentially go against the Winter Olympics. They did it for season four. And my guess is that ratings were good enough back then that they could do it. But since ratings have been suffering lately, they decided to hold it back and not compete against the Olympics. And they did a similar thing in 2016 when they held it back. It was like a couple week gap between Fear and The Walking Dead, and it was during the Summer Olympics. So,
well, you know, they don't have to worry this year about running into Game of Thrones scheduling.
Right.
So they can actually start a little bit later.
Right. Which, you know, means that we're going to get episodes into deep into April, which will be nice, I think. All right. So our other news item has to do with Fear the Walking Dead. And Lara, I expect you'll have something to talk about with this. So we had another report of some casting news. Kevin Zegers joins the cast for season four. And you may have seen him on Notorious, which was on ABC. He was on Grace Point, which was on Fox for a season. That's kind of a redo of the BBC show Broadchurch. And he was in The Mortal Instruments, City of Bones.
I haven't heard of any of those shows, but I did see The Mortal Instruments, unfortunately, which was a good movie. And I don't remember it. I think I've wiped it from my memory.
So we haven't had either of you on since the news about Morgan and them shooting in Austin and all that. And, you know, the other casting news, Jenna Elfman and Garrett Dillahunt. And of course, Lenny James as Morgan comes on that show. So, be a good time to ask you guys. So what do you think of all the changes on Fear coming for season four?
I'm three seasons behind on Fear. So I do plan to get caught up before the next season starts. So, because I'm two seasons behind. I watched the first season. I haven't watched two or three. And I've heard that the show has gotten continuously better. I like the idea. And I was very surprised watching Talking Dead to see that it was Lenny James that was moving. Cause my mind was dead set that it was going to be Michael Cudlitz.
Yeah. I originally thought it was going to be like a drop in, you know, with, it could have been Negan. But once they announced that they were filming in Texas, I kind of figured, no, it's got to be Abraham. So Morgan was a complete shock to me. What do you think, Lara, about all of it?
Well, you know, I was kind of against the crossover. And when I think about it now, I'm actually more of a Fear fan than Walking Dead at this current point in both of their timelines. But I really loved season three, and I was not happy to see Dave Erickson leave because I thought he did such a great job with season three. And
spoilers! I haven't watched it yet. I'm only kidding.
But you didn't know that he left the show?
No. It doesn't matter. I'll forget by the time I get to that point anyway.
Okay.
But spoiler.
So hearing that Scott Gimple was going to be producing, I was like, oh man, they're going to move it more in the direction of The Walking Dead, and it's going to be more over the top and comic-y. And the thing that I loved about it is that it's more grounded and realistic than The Walking Dead, sorry. So I like that we have two different flavors of The Walking Dead. But I was also surprised to hear it was going to be Lenny James. I had no idea it would be that character. And honestly, I'm still a little confused about how they're going to make that work. But I was actually a little more enthusiastic that when I found out it was going to be Lenny James, because for one, he's an amazing actor. And for secondly, he is a more grounded character than Abraham, who I swore I thought it would be, because Abraham's kind of crazy, over-the-top comic book character. But I thought, you know, maybe it would work if it was early on in the apocalypse and he was a little less Abraham-ish. his hair wasn't so orange, and he didn't come up with all these just off-the-cuff one-liners. If he was more of a family man, that would work. But yeah, I'm actually glad it's going to be Lenny James. He's a little more of a grounded character. He's got a lot of baggage, and I think he'll be interesting on the show. I'm just going to let it flow, and however it turns out, I'll be interested.
So that was one of the reasons why I was excited at the thought of it possibly being Abraham, because of where I knew the show was moving to and what his backstory was. I think it would have been a completely different version of Abraham that we had gotten on The Walking Dead. It would have been one that was the family man, and before he became so hardened from losing his family. So that's one of the reasons I was actually very excited about the opportunity of it being Abraham. But again, I love Lenny James as well. So I'm excited to see what he's going to bring to season four, especially once they get caught up.
Yeah, I think that when it comes to grounded characters, like the two that I can think of that could have, well, I guess three characters that could have fit in some way, although two of them, I don't see how they pull it off. Carol, Tara, and Morgan. Now, I don't think Tara would be a big enough draw. Carol would definitely be a big enough draw, but Melissa McBride actually lives in Atlanta, so it would kind of be a little bit of a setback, I think, for her to go. And, you know, she's
I don't even know how that would work unless it would be after, like, well, several years after, because she was always with abusive, horrible Ed.
Well, that's been my theory all along, and I think if it ends up being Morgan in the past somewhere, I may rage quit both shows.
I think it would have to be. I think it would absolutely have to be Morgan in the past, because if you think about the fact that, one, Fear the Walking Dead takes place before Walking Dead, so it's almost like a prequel show just with a different cast. If you were to do the time jump for Fear the Walking Dead and make it run concurrent to Walking Dead, that wouldn't work, because you have to figure Morgan's character is in DC. He now has to make it to Texas. And in this world, how long did it take them to get from just Atlanta to DC? You would not only have to fast forward Fear the Walking Dead to be current to Walking Dead, but you would have to have it surpass it.
Yes.
Fear the Walking Dead would have to be in the future of The Walking Dead. And I don't think they're prepared to make that big of a jump. I think the only way this works is if it is a Morgan, not necessarily from before Rick, because that was pretty much determined to be the beginning of everything. But also at the same time, we don't know how long Rick was in that coma. So this could take place before The Walking Dead even started.
Well, I thought I was going to be in 100% agreement with you, Ben, but it turns out I'm in 0% agreement with you, because the only way it makes any sense to me is if it's a future Morgan, because we know exactly what Morgan was doing and where he was all the way through from the very beginning until.
Do we know?
Yeah, we do. We know that Eastman, his cottage is in Atlanta. The town that that we see in Clear is Rick's town. So it doesn't make any sense for them to go to, for him to go to Texas and back, and same kind of thing before Eastman, you know, from Clear to Eastman, and here's not here. Again, it doesn't make any sense. And then afterwards, after Eastman, you know, on the way to Washington, he would have to again go all the way to Texas. Although you could make the case, the only way I could see it work is if it's not Texas. It's east of Texas, significantly east.
But what east of Texas looks like Texas.
Right.
It's very dry and arid.
Exactly.
Well, but again, I have to reiterate the point as well that this could, in essence, we don't know how long Rick was in that initial coma in the beginning. And Rick didn't meet Morgan until he had woken up from that. Morgan could have either been in Texas when this apocalypse happened, before or when it had first started, and then made his way back to Atlanta, happened to run into Rick after Rick woke up. So this, in essence, still could be before The Walking Dead.
I think I've heard it said that he was in the coma from either a month to 2 months, but and he actually could not live that long.
Right.
But no. Made that, for sake of fiction, that's about how long they've said he was in the coma. And then, but I do know, I think I've heard that Morgan didn't live in Rick's town.
Right.
So I think he was passing through. So he could have started off in Texas and come that way.
Well, the only thing against that, though, is that, and this is previous showrunner, said that they were, like, the last season was essentially equivalent to season two of The Walking Dead, like, same kind of timeline. So I tend to think that a pre-Morgan or pre-Rick Morgan doesn't really work. They'd have to recast Dwayne, for example. It's just, I don't see it. The only thing I can see is a future Morgan. Mm. And that means a massive time jump. And that means, and Kyle brought this up, and I think you brought it up too, Laura, is it means a potential loss of seeing the characters grow and change, mm-hmm. you know, so if they do a massive time jump and it starts right at the beginning of season four, there's going to be a whole bunch of things that have happened to those characters that we're not going to see. So, it could work out really well and it could work out terribly. I'm thinking it's going to work out pretty well, but it's too soon to know for sure. I mean, we may see it and, you know, just like, why did you change this show so radically? Something that, you know, was pretty much working by the end of season three. I would say, for the most part, season three of Fear, it's probably better than season eight. Certainly don't have the same kind of, reservations about certain things that have happened. So
I think we're just going to have to wait to see until season four premieres and we get the introduction of Morgan's identical twin.
I thought of that too. and yeah, it's his identical cousin.
Yes.
let's move on to the actual discussion of this episode. So Ben, what did you think of How It's Gotta Be?
Oh man, I've been juggling this rating in my head knowing I was going to be on this episode, and I've even watched the episode twice, and I think I've figured it out. I'm giving it about a 7.5 out of 10 dead Oceansiders. I was going to call it Dead Grandmas, but I thought that would be wrong.
Poor grandma. All right. What'd you think, Laura?
I gave it, I liked it. I didn't love it. 8 out of 10 scorched earth or scorched future plot lines, which I'll go into further.
Yeah. When I first watched this, I loved it. And I still sort of love it, but I see a lot of its faults now. Can't help it. And that is a combination of watching it multiple times and listening to some feedback and just absorbing it and all of that. So originally it was going to be a 9.7, and with every watch it went down, and I'm going to still give it a 9. Catastrophic crapped in khakis.
I was wondering what that was.
Yeah. Inside baseball thing. I put something cryptic in the show notes. So I do that to get a reaction. All right. Well, we have some listener ratings. Ben, why don't you start it off?
Sure. First off, we have a rating from Claire Lang Redderer, and she says, I'm not going to lie. This one hurt. It hurt bad. I will give the episode an 8 out of 10 surprise Walker bites.
And Cheryl Rainey Fox says, I give this episode 6.9 out of 10 Alexandria House Exploding.
Deanna says, I rate this episode 8 out of 10. I was expecting the end to this stupid war before the season ended. Oh, well.
She can still get it. The season's not technically over.
Well, maybe she meant the mid-season.
The mid-season finale, sure. And one other one we have from Whitney Alvarez. I give the episode 9 out of 10.
All right. And now it's time for Awesome Sauce. Why, thank you, Ruthie. All right, Ben, you're up again.
This one from Cheryl Rainey Fox. Awesome sauce is the fact that, if anything, the writers have given us something to talk about for the next 2.5 months. That is certainly true.
Yep.
Definitely. And Claire Lang Redderer says, awesome sauce would be Carl. The way he was ready to stand against Negan and the Saviors by himself was mature and brave. I love how they've developed his character throughout the years and watching all that he's traversed. He has become one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, and I would agree with that one. And I'll tell you, after watching it through the first time, watching it a second time, you see all those things that he did in this episode, and you put it under the context of the fact that he was bitten the whole time. It's kind of unsettling. Dieta says, awesome sauce was Carl distracting the Saviors and Ezekiel saving his people. And then she added, Maggie, she was awesome in the episode. So I agree on all counts.
Yeah, you know, I agree with both of those counts as well.
Me too.
And Whitney Alvarez, Awesome Sauce, great transitions directing, which kept interest and a continual progression of moving the story forward in the episode. Although it's heartbreaking to see Carl is bitten, the episode is true to the Walking Dead style of storytelling. I think it gets even harder over time, the longer the show goes and the longer we've known a key character to accept that they can be still killed off the show. Nothing is permanent and we're reminded how dangerous this world is. And I fully agree with a lot of that statement. And of course she has one other, that Maggie is Awesome Sauce. I love how she's handling the situation they're in and she's doing a great job, which again, I agree with. I love the return of this, this bad Maggie, bad in a good way.
All right. Well, that's it for our listener, Awesome Sauce. And now it comes to us. And Ben, I'm going to give you a chance to rest your voice for a minute and, okay. And go to Laura. You have a few Awesome Sauce.
Well, I agreed with Whitney and some of our other listeners that I love Maggie. Actually, my entire Awesome Sauce is some of the great character moments, starting with Maggie. I see her as the show's Daenerys Targaryen. You know, she's got this heart. She loves her people. She wants to do the best for them. But just like Daenerys, for any of you other Game of Thrones listeners, she will be brutal if she has to be. I don't think this is Maggie's first kill. I think she's killed at least one other human character on the show back in season 3 at the prison. But I love that she didn't let that guy bully her. You know, a bully can stand up to you so many times before you got to bite back. And she bit back and you could tell that as she was walking away, the thing that I love the most is when she walked away and her face just broke and you could just see the anguish on her face about that. So I just love that from her. I love the return of the samurai, our samurai Michonne, because she's been a little bit neutered the past season and a half, just kind of following along with Rick, which is fine. You know, she's a great supportive partner, but you know, she was such a badass when the show started and she hasn't been doing that all that much. I know she's been filming Black Panther, but it was so great to see her just wail on that one survivor. She was vicious and it was like the return of old Michonne.
Yeah.
And Ezekiel's self-sacrifice for his people. I think he finally stepped up and instead of letting his people protect him, he protected them and he basically put himself on the chopping block for his people.
Yeah. The return of the king in this episode.
Yeah. Like you say, he acted kingly and defended his people versus all the people trying to defend him. So I thought that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. All right, Ben, what you got?
I have to reiterate, of course, the return of this version of Maggie. And I think the Daenerys comparison is a great comparison, considering Maggie has been one of my favorite characters throughout the run of the show, as has Daenerys in Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. So it just goes to show that I'm a fan of that type of character because she is very much like that. I was a big fan of the Aaron and Edith moment in the beginning of the episode as well. I'm not a fan of where that moment left off, bringing the Oceansiders back. I don't know what the deal with them is as of yet. But these are two characters that pretty much, I think, are ever since Aaron lost Eric and Enid has kind of separated from Carl, who's kind of taken more of a leadership role as of late, I think, and now, of course, with his future being sealed. These are two characters that have pretty much been on their own for a little while now, and I like the fact that they kind of find a little bit of compassion in one another. And it almost seemed to me like Aaron took on a little bit, almost of a fatherly role to Enid, you know, letting her drive and things like that. So I like that moment with the two of them in the show, even though we don't know where it's going to go from this point. Another piece of Awesome Sauce to me, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier on in wanting to pin a medal on Scott Gimple, is I love and I applaud the risk that the writers have taken to not even slightly, but greatly break away from the source material. This is something that I've read the source material at least through the end of All Out War. So I've been familiar with the source material from the start of watching this show. And now that it is diverted with the death of this character so greatly, this is something that, if anything, draws me back into the show, because now the future is uncertain to me for any character, especially when you do something like this to a character as large and seemingly untouchable as Carl. Now I don't know what they're going to do next. So now I want to continue to watch. So I know it's a big complaint with some people, but I greatly applaud the writers on this decision.
It is a bold move. Definitely. And, you know, in many ways, it may help to resuscitate the writers, you know, and the creative forces on the show, you know, that they may have felt kind of stifled by the storylines that were in the comic book, you know, because they've kind of followed them to a T. And Carl is still alive in the comic book, and from what I understand, is very active in all of the stories within the comic book. So taking him out of the picture completely changes everything for the future of the show.
Carl has almost become like a new ipso facto leader of Alexandria in the comics. And
right.
And I didn't mean to cut you off, Brian, or interrupt. But it, you know, I think one of the reasons why I've been so down on this show these past couple weeks is because I have read All Out War. I was expecting so much more, knowing what I've read in the comics, expecting that to appear on screen, and it hasn't been transitioned properly on screen, in my opinion, which is why I've lost a little bit of interest. But now knowing again that they're willing to divert this greatly means now I think the writers, as you mentioned, will feel a little bit of relief and feel like they have a little bit more freedom to change it up. And now I think, if anything, might not bring so many viewers back, but it might certainly bring me back.
Yeah, I think that, like I said, I think it's a bold move, and it just completely opens up the story possibilities. Now, I think in a lot of ways too, like I could say the same thing about Game of Thrones when they didn't have to stick to the written book as much. That's when the show really got interesting for me. You can say what you want about that. That's neither here nor there. I can say the same thing about what's in the book, but this particular change is a huge change that can't be discounted and can't be overlooked. Like this, like in many ways, this may put a shelf life on the show. Like what I mean by that is they can no longer transition kind of the authority to Carl because Carl won't be there. So they either transfer it to another character maybe, or it stays with Rick as long as Rick is a part of the show. And if Andrew Lincoln ever decides that he doesn't want to be on the show anymore, that's when the show ends. You know, they don't try to, well, with AMC, who the hell knows? They may try to milk the cow, you know, until it can't give milk anymore. But I have to think that this is a bold move, but at the same time, it may limit the show to 10 or 11 or at the maximum 12 seasons. And that might be it after that, because how long can you go with, you know, and as people age and that? And I think in thinking about it, Carl's age has always been a problem with the show, and Chandler Rinks has been aging faster than Carl has. And I have a clip for that later that when we get into our own discussion, we'll talk about that more. As far as my awesome sauce, I have a few things. Stephen Ogg and his performance as Simon in the scenes there on the road, he's just so he's awesome as usual, but I thought he particularly shined very brightly in this episode. So I give him an awesome sauce. And Simon's always just in many ways such a menacing character. He's a character that is always interesting to watch.
I was just going to say, Brian, the whole scenes with Simon and Maggie seemed the most real to me. Those were the best scenes of the episode, in my opinion.
I agree. I do agree. I don't think he earned it, especially the things that he thinks happened. Like, for example, he thought that it worked. His little strategy worked. Maybe he doesn't think so now. But Daryl got his wings back. So as far as that's concerned, I will say. But as far as the plan, you know, you had a good thing and you had to change it.
And you blew it. You blew it. You blew it. You blew it. You had it all and you blew it.
I think that whole plan probably could have succeeded if they hadn't sent all the walkers in. So I talked about this last episode, but my last thing, and there's certain things that you could say certainly in my weak sauce about this fight. There were good things about it, but the one thing I will single out that I particularly loved when Rick grabbed some kind of like small vase or planter or something like that in his fist and cold cocked Negan and like knocked him clear off of his feet. That I loved. And, I just wish that the fight had gotten better after that. All right. So, now is time for weak sauce.
You're worthless and weak.
And just for you, Lara.
That sounds awesome.
No, it's lame. Everything's lame.
I love that one.
All right. Ben, I gave you three little weak sauces because we got a Lara and I got a few long ones, so.
Sure, I'll knock them out pretty quick. Deanna Patterson says, weak sauce is no main saviors have died yet, which I didn't even really think about until she said it herself. It hasn't even really occurred to me that not many have died yet, if any. She also says, Eugene just sucks something terrible. He is defiantly a flip-flopper who can't be trusted. And Whitney Alvarez says, lame sauce that we have to wait until February 25th to continue our journey.
Yeah, it always sucks, these hiatuses, but in many ways, I don't know. I think this hiatus is good at this point. All right, Lara, you've got one from Cheryl.
And Cheryl says, there was a whole lot of weak sauce in this episode. One, why would they show Aaron and Enid go to Oceanside and have Enid kill Natanya? What was the point? That could have easily been placed at a later time. I kind of agree with you there, Cheryl.
I do too, actually.
And then she continues with, there could have been more fighting between Rick and Negan. Rick just running away and finding Michonne was too easy, as Carl's magic trick with the smoke. How could we not see or hear the great moving? It was too quick. And lastly, also the dumb heapsters. They saw that Sanctuary was compromised and Jada said, not like pictured, or something to that effect, and the deal was off, and they were gone. Deserters!
All right. Yeah, to that end, here's this.
Different from picture.
Dang it! It's coming through the window! We hit it! Fall back!
I got a kick out of how he says, fall back! Like, when he realizes that they're not only falling back, but they are bailing. So, yeah, that was funny. She only had the one line, and it was different from picture.
They don't often have too many lines.
Yeah, well, they're lame. They are definitely lame. All right, Claire Lang-Redderer, who was one of our guest hosts on episode 5, she says, lame sauce is also Carl. Did they seriously have Carl get bit? What a huge mistake for the showrunners to do this. Carl has so much more story to tell, places to go, and things to do. I was not ready for this, and I think it was a bad decision. As much as I love Daryl, Carol, Morgan, and even Judith, I think they could have killed off one of those characters, and it would have had the same impact. Those characters had a full story arc, but Carl was just getting started. I'm still hoping for a dumpster plot twist, but I'm not sure how they could do this without sacrificing good writing. It's going to be a long winter. Well, to that end, I just had to come back and say, well, Judith's had no story arc at all. We know nothing about that little girl. And I'm still strongly believing that, and we talked about this already, but I don't think a dead Morgan would work on fear. It just causes way too many retcon situations that they would have to do. I think the only way the crossover works and with, Morgan there for the long haul is if Morgan is there for the long haul. And the only way he can be there for the long haul is if he is going there in the future. So, I mean, you know, I can talk about this again in detail, each possibility and why I think it's only future, but that is for another episode.
I want to make a quick comment too about the whole Claire's comment about Carl was just getting started. Was he really just getting started? He's been on the show for 7.5 seasons. I don't count that as just getting started. I think he was transitioning to a new point, but I don't think his character was just getting started. And he's been there for a long while.
Yeah.
And he's one of those characters that, and I've said this in our Facebook group that we talked amongst, he was quickly becoming a moral compass for the group. And that's a no-go on this show. Anytime you become a moral compass for this group, your life is cut short. It was proven with Herschel. It was proven with Dale. It was proven with Glenn. And now it was proven with Carl.
Yep.
Yeah, I have some weak sauce about that, too.
All right. Well, Ben, it's time for our weak sauce. So why don't you get started with yours?
All right. I'll try and push through them as quickly as possible. The biggest point of weak sauce I have, again, is going back to this whole issue with Carl, and it's more along the lines of the people complaining and the complaining from the fans. And when I say that, I don't mean any disrespect to the fans. Everybody's entitled to their own opinions and their own attachments to these characters. But it's more along the lines of the fans who considered Carl untouchable and Rick untouchable. And there are people that still count Daryl and Carol untouchable. And I think that's far from the truth as well. I think this is one of those situations that Robert Kirkman has come out long ago, and he has said that as far as these characters go, whether it's the comic books or the TV show, nobody is untouchable. Nobody is guaranteed life. Anybody could be written off, including Rick. And I could see it happening. There was even a time watching this mid-season finale, I thought it could have been Rick, especially during that fight with Negan. So I don't count any of these characters untouchable. And I don't think it's right to hold it against the show that you kill off a character like Carl. I think this just progresses the show in a different way. So my weak sauce is just the number of people complaining that they've written off a character who's untouchable. Well, they haven't, because the writers just proved to you that nobody is untouchable. As far as the mid-season finale goes, the episode itself, I thought there were a little too many storylines going on at one time. It wasn't until my second viewing that certain things about the episode started to make sense. I know upon my first viewing, I'll give you an example. I remember Rick jumping in the car with Carol and Jerry, and the next thing I know, Jerry's being held hostage by Simon. And I kind of got confused. I was like, okay, when did that happen? Because we didn't see anything like that happen. And last I remember, he was with Carol and Rick. And it wasn't until second viewing that I realized all of these people kind of went off on their own. We hear some kind of an accident, but we don't see who was involved. And now we know who was involved in that accident, which is how they got Jerry. My only other weak sauce to this is the face close-ups that we got. I think we talked about this during the season premiere as well, that they were doing these artsy face close-ups, and that was a big point of contention with some people. And now this mid-season finale, not only did we get them again, but we got them twice. It bookended the episode both in the beginning and at the end. And to me, it's not artsy, it's time filler.
Yeah.
So that was a big complaint of mine as well.
They did that in episode 2 as well, those close-ups. So they've done it, and it's like they're trying to be artistic with the show and tell a story across 8 episodes, and not, it's like they're writing to the binge watcher and instead of writing it to the week to week. Because before the season finale, or the mid-season finale, sorry, I went back and watched the first 7 episodes on Sunday, and it plays better when you see them all back to back to back to back to back to back to back. But when you have to simmer over a week, you know, to see where it's going, I don't think it plays as well. And certain decisions that they've made with the story don't play as well week to week. I mean, if anything, it puts certain things over a magnifying glass, and you kind of wonder, like, how the heck did Negan assemble such a large fighting force to be able to basically take over 3 compounds after being decimated? We see at least 2 outposts have been eliminated, at least as far as the Saviors are concerned. With the satellite posts, they don't even know about the 38 that are being detained. But at the other place, you know, where Rick and Daryl and Aaron were, that looked like, you know, they were pretty much wiped out. The chemical place where Gavin was, that's pretty much wiped out. Well, that's totally wiped out, actually. They killed everybody. So how is it that they still have enough to be able to overtake everybody? I don't know how you can justify that. That was one of the things that I will say I heard on another podcast. I think it was the Walking Dead TV podcast, and watching it like my final time, I couldn't help but, it's like, how were they able to do that? Like, did they enlist some of the workers as soldiers now? Or is it just that the sanctuary has so many Negans that they can still overtake everybody?
Yeah.
Right. And Negan pulled together that plan in what, matter of minutes after escaping the sanctuary, whereas Rick had weeks and weeks to concoct his plan, and it didn't work as well as Negan's 30-second plan overhaul.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian, I have one more quick one, if that's okay.
Yep.
There was one moment in the episode, and I only bring this up because you'll enjoy the comparison I'm going to make. There was one moment in this episode that I found really absolutely predictable, and it was the scene with Maggie and Simon and Jerry and Neil in the back seat of the car. When you get a moment in an episode like this where there's a guy who has a line, which is, you know, what was the line, like damn right or something
damn
like
straight.
That. Damn straight. You give one guy who's out of nowhere this one line, and you throw him in the background with two major characters. This guy's a dead man. You might as well have just put a red shirt on him from the beginning of this scene and let him run with it. Because I knew the moment this guy said something, I'm like, who is this guy? And then he ends up getting killed in that scene. And it's completely predictable that he was a dead man from the start.
Yep.
Yeah. I thought that was somebody's favorite uncle who got to say that line. Just like somebody's favorite aunt who got to say, thank you, Negan. Thank God for you.
Hey, yep. he got a SAG card and he got paid for that. So can't complain on his end.
Yeah, I've seen that actor before. I can't remember where, but you know, I've seen him on something Southern. That's all I'll say. I don't know what it could have been, but I have seen that actor before. All right, Lara, you have several things listed, so let's hear them.
Well, that goes under my overall weak sauce or main sauce of not only for this episode but the season. I mentioned how I really loved the character developments this season. I think that's because the actors are really doing a bang up job about, you know, for playing their roles, but where I find the show has been a little lacking lately has been in the writing, and just so many examples of it through this whole season. And the main one is the trash holes, which I have to thank Jamie Dimmock from our Facebook group for giving us that awesome name for them, because I love it. They're just absolutely useless. I don't understand why we even spent like an episode and a half with Rick trying to fight to get them on his side, and they walk in there. Jadis is looking like she's going to be a badass. You know, she's just walking in there next to Rick like she's his partner. And a few shots fire and they just run away. Why do we even have them here? So they just, I don't know. I don't know if they're just taking up time on the show or, you know, giving us another group to add in the mix, but they're just absolutely, absolutely useless.
Laura?
And, yes.
Did you say run away?
I did.
Run away!
That was the first thing I thought of too, when the way you were saying it.
That rabbit is dynamite. For any of you Monty Python fans, you'll know exactly where that came from.
Yes, you will.
Yeah, there might be a couple more you'll hear.
The Negan and Rick fight was really cool, but I mean, Rick had the opportunity to kill Negan. He's been talking about this whole time going to kill him, and he takes the bat, takes time to turn Lucille around and bash Negan in the head with the blunt end. That just reeked to me of plot armor. And I thought he didn't have to kill Negan, but I think there could have been a better way to write that. Like, he swings, Negan rolls away, grabs something and beats, you know, Rick with it. I thought that was very out of character for him. And, you know, speaking of which, I feel like there's a lot of characters who are being written out of character.
Yep.
Daryl, who has always stood by Rick, even way back in season 3, when Rick was going to give Michonne up to the governor, and Daryl was completely not on board with it, but he stuck by Rick and stuck by his decision making. All of a sudden, he's going rogue. I kind of can understand he's got PTSD and he's got his own thing, but he's never rebelled this much from Rick. And I don't know, I felt that really out of place. Rosita's suddenly become kind of like this team player. Well, she's always been this salty individual who doesn't like to go with what everybody else says. I mean, she tried to kill Negan herself, but I guess that's because she learned her lesson, that she seemed to be back to herself. But I just feel like they keep changing the characters to fit the storyline. And that's one thing that I can never abide by, is just completely changing a character because certain plot points have to be met. And even Michonne, like I mentioned, she seemed to have been neutered this past season. I mean, she was always such a badass. She even went up against the governor and got beat up and was able to, you know, continue fighting with the group. But, you know, she gets into this fight with one of the heapsters last season, and she's out of commission for who knows how long. And oh, the one thing that just annoyed me so much about last episode was that she didn't agree with Daryl and Tara's plan. She told him, I can't go through with this. And she just walks away. I'm like, if you know this is going to ruin Rick's plan, why don't you say something? Why don't you do something to stop him? But I mean, that was last season, but I'm sorry, last episode. But I just felt like it's so unlike their characters to do some of the things they're doing.
Yeah. I'm just going to stop you there because we'll do the next two in a minute. But I just wanted to say your points about Negan and Rick are right on the money. Like, you know, you would expect Rick to take a swing at him. And it was not only that he, you know, took the handle of the bat to him, but somehow Negan was able to fight him off, like, after being hit. I mean, that was just so lame. It just seemed like, Rick, you had a good chance, a darn good chance to kill Negan.
And you blew it! You blew it! You blew it! You blew it! You had it all and you blew it!
I hate to use that one twice, but it's appropriate.
I think, though, speaking devil's advocate on this, though, I think Negan had the jump on Rick to begin with. That fight should have been over before it even started, and Rick should have been dead.
Yeah.
Yes, Rick had an opportunity to kill Negan, but Negan had that opportunity first.
You're right.
And it was blown. So, I mean, I there's many different ways to look at disappointments in that fight. I mean, like, again, I had initially thought, what I mentioned earlier, I thought it could have been Rick that was dying this episode, and that could have been the scene that happened, because Negan had his number and somehow Rick got out of it. But if Negan was good, as good as he claimed to be, Rick would have been dead.
Yeah.
True. But we've never seen Negan in a fist fight with someone. We've seen Rick go off on people pretty badly in a fist fight.
It reminded me of the fight between Michonne and the governor, but it wasn't anywhere near done as well, you know, because in that case, it was literally like they had no weapons, and it was, I think, you know, just them between each other. And, you know, thanks to a broken aquarium, a nice little shard of glass in the eye. But to me, that would have made more sense to, like, just it turn into fisticuffs versus them having anything to get each other with, because, like you say, and I agree with you, Ben, there was plot armor on both sides. So
yeah.
All right, the other thing I was going to say is the playing out of character. I mean, preach it, sister. Because I said the same thing last week, that the characters are acting a certain way to move the plot according to however they want to move the plot. We're having this over and over again, where we're seeing these characters do things that we don't expect them to do. Like, for example, Carl. Carl, last season, wanted to kill Negan, and now he's saying that they need to save them, you know, that they don't need to kill everybody. I mean, that is a sharp turn in exactly. Character.
That's that moral compass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did that just come from all of a sudden? I mean, I saw no example of that when he was about to be hit by Negan in the season finale before the tiger came up. You know, that's a GD tiger.
So. I mean, Carl has gone back and forth on the moral compass, like, you know, when he shot the boy at the prison. But then also there have been times where he's told his dad that they need, I think when they got to Alexandria, he was one of the ones who said, you know, we need to get along with these people. But Yeah, you're exactly right, Brian. I mean, last season he was willing to kill Negan. Now he wants to save him. Yeah.
Not only willing to kill Negan, but smuggled himself to the sanctuary to try it himself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and now he's willing to. Now, granted, your life perspective is going to change when you know you are running out of time because you've been bitten. But still, you're right. Even before that, his opinion on everything has changed. And he says, we have to live with these people. So, you know, what are we doing at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah. My last few points were just some dangling plot holes. I mean, I'm sure towards the end of the finale, we'll understand everything. And I'm sure if we binge it, it'll make sense. But what the hell was Eugene's plan? I mean, I hope it's better than the popsicle stick glider, strong enough to hold an iPod and a speaker that I'm sure is going to be so loud it's going to divert the walkers, like hundreds of walkers, away from the sanctuary. But I mean, I don't like that Daryl and Tara went against Rick and you know, went rogue and plowed into the sanctuary. But when I think about it, and I think what the writers were even trying to say to us in some of those bits of exposition and dialogue was that it wasn't their plan that released the saviors. It was Eugene and whatever brilliant plan he came up with that got them out of there. Because I still think they probably would have died once all those walkers came flooding in. And also there were snipers all around. How come, you know, if they were going to get out when the walkers were around, the snipers couldn't capture them or, you know, pick them off as they were coming out when the walkers went in. So, I mean, somehow Eugene came up with this awesome plan to get them out and to avoid the snipers and to possibly kill the snipers. So I'm just annoyed that I don't know what the plan is. And I guess we'll find out in the new year, and I better be good. Because if it's something that I could have thought of, Eugene's not that smart.
Yeah. And it also seemed like they reassembled the Fat Lady, or they had Fat Lady 2. Right. You know, because we see that with Simon, we hear the opera playing. So, you know, was that part of it, or did they have a Fat Lady on premise? And if they did, why didn't they use it before? I mean, so that deserves some explanation, I think.
And why would you have two of them?
Indeed. Sure. Why would you have two of them?
Because Negan is always prepared. He's like a Boy Scout. And I'm sorry this is long, but this is my last and most important point, is that I feel like The Walking Dead is not walking the talk. They seem to want to express a theme of mercy, but every time there is a character that preaches humanity, they end up dying. I mean, we've mentioned Herschel, Dale, Glenn. It's like every time they say that there should be some humanity, we need to work with other people, we need to show mercy, that person ends up dying. And the latest one is Carl. And so I'm really questioning what they're saying about morality in some of these episodes.
That's that moral compass, being a death sentence.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
They seem to want to say that that's the way to go, but it never is. That person always seems to end up dying.
And it is kind of tropey at this point. You know, it's like once someone starts spouting this stuff off, they die. And like even Gabriel, he's not out of the woods. He could still die. You know, and he's kind of had some of that moral compass going on this half season so far. Yeah, it is a bad trope at this point. Okay, so I've agreed with a lot of the weak sauce. So a few odd things that I noticed. Like, nobody heard the one savior say, on the ground, kid, the fog, the canisters or whatever. You would think that a bunch of them would have ended up coming to that area trying to find him. And it seemed like no one did beyond the people that were already there. Why did it take so long for Rick to show up at Alexandria? That's a good question that I have. Is the distance between the sanctuary and Alexandria farther than, you know, it was for the kingdom, and the other group didn't make it, or whoever Jerry got, you know, got into the accident, you know, like I would assume that both of them were closer to the kingdom than they were. And, you know, for that matter, why would Carol and Jerry have to go in separate cars? If they're both going to the kingdom, why can't they ride together? That's another question I have there. But
maybe he was heading for the hilltop, is it my only guess.
Maybe. Certainly he ended up with the hilltop. The other thing that I had, it was really a head scratcher for me. I had to go back and watch it again. Okay, so Eugene's got this digital alarm clock.
I love this point, by the way.
How does the digital alarm clock work when they have no power? Like, I'm sorry, but if it's a question of, well, you know, you put a 9-volt battery in there. 9-volt batteries in digital alarm clocks do not illuminate the room. I'm sorry. Like, it's just barely enough power to keep the thing going without a power loss. So
they don't even, those batteries aren't even meant to keep the clock going. They're only meant so that you don't have to reset them when you get power back. All they do is keep the memory.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, and I look back, I'm like, did he have power in the whole room? And sure enough, no, he didn't. He had like a little portable light there. So I can't figure out how that digital alarm clock had any power. It makes no sense. Considering
he had it running with popsicle sticks and an iPod.
It was solar powered. Maybe. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's solar powered. I have to say that was dumb. It makes me wonder, like, did they do that for millennials younger than you, whatever the next generation is? Because there is supposedly, I've heard of kids not being able to tell time with a clock, which I don't know. Laura, I know you have an 11-year-old, so hopefully she knows how to tell time with a dial clock.
She does. She knows how to read analog time, but some of her classmates do not.
See, that's my point. So maybe that's why they did it, but it's just dumb. It was really dumb, and there was no reason for it to be a digital alarm clock. And I tell you, what? Huh? Does he have power? And then I'm like, no, he doesn't. Like, I had to watch that like four, five times separately just to figure out what was going on. So anyway, that I thought that was weak. And
attention to detail, Walking Dead.
Yeah. We have a sad sauce. That came in from Dieta, and she says, sad sauce is Carl's death. Now, what do you think about that, Laura?
Well, he's not dead yet.
I'm not dead!
Yeah, he says he's not dead.
Yes, he is.
I'm not!
That note in the programming notes made so much more sense after you played the runaway clip.
Yep.
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look,
just a flesh wound.
Now I need to watch that movie, like either tonight or tomorrow, because of hearing this.
Yep.
It's merely a flesh wound, guys. Don't worry about it.
It's just a flesh
wound. He'll get better.
Well, here's something I thought about, and I'd love to get you guys' opinion on this too. We've already learned throughout the course of these 7.5, 8 seasons that pretty much everybody in this world is infected with this virus. It's just a matter of you don't become a walker until you die. So that being said, if everybody is already infected with this, why isn't there any possibility that you could survive a bite? Because if you're already infected, why couldn't you just treat a bite as if you were bitten by an animal, wrap it up, stop the bleeding, and still survive? Why does a bite mean guaranteed death?
I wondered the same thing. Like, take a big jar of peroxide and pour it on there. Who knows? I mean, you could die, but who knows? You might get better.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, that's the thing that I don't understand is why does this? I understand they've already said that this is going to play out like any other bite, which in this world means Carl's a dead man. But why does that have to be the case? Why can't people in this world get bit and still survive if everybody's already infected to begin with?
Yeah, I have wondered about that, and it's almost like the virus or the whatever it is that causes the dead to walk the earth has like two different states that it's in. One is it's dormant and that gets activated upon death, assuming that the brain is able to function. And then the other is with the bite, and it like has some kind of rapid infection that goes along with it. And whether that's like the same disease or something coincidentally different, we don't know. And unfortunately, we're never going to know. Cause, you know, Kirkman feels very strongly about that and would certainly change the, path of the show would remind me of The Last Ship, because The Last Ship, you know, they found a cure after the first season. That's not a zombie thing, but it wasn't like a virus thing.
Like an outbreak.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an outbreak that, you know, wiped out like 80% or something like that of humanity. So I don't know. I don't think we'll ever know. And, you know, part of me wishes that we would. And then part of me thinks that it's Blaine would say.
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
Simply because we're never going to know. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny that you say Kirkman is like has strongly said that, you know, we'll never know what caused this virus. But Kirkman has also come out and said strongly that by the end of The Walking Dead, whether it be the comic books or the TV show, the humans are going to survive and the walkers will be eradicated. I don't buy that for a second. But
and he's also said that there'd be no crossovers. So, you know.
True.
I mean, Kirkman, I think, plays the Steve Jobs card a lot, you know, deny, deny, deny until they actually have a product.
Yeah.
We're not going to make a phone. No way. We think that's a stupid idea. Here's our new iPhone. You know, so, okay. That's it for our various sasai. So now let's get into feedback.
We can talk about it.
We're done talking. Time to listen.
All right. So, our feedback, Ben, you have the first one.
All right. This one comes from Gary via the feedback page. He says, hey, everyone, a few thoughts on the mid-season finale of The Walking Dead. First, you wonder if things would have went better if Daryl did not crash the sanctuary and the walkers kept them inside. Second, how did the saviors have all those vehicles to use after they got out? You would think Rick's crew would have taken all of them and or disabled any of them or any they couldn't take just in case the saviors would not have been half the threat if they had to be on foot, which is a very good point, and I think we addressed a little bit earlier. Third, you have to think that Carl is somehow going to be used to defeat Negan in the next episode, and who knows, maybe they will actually have Eugene surprise us and play a part in Negan's defeat also. If Carl defeats Negan, it will almost be like David beating Goliath. How fitting. Fourth, after Negan is finally defeated, you wonder what the next threat or challenge will be for Rick's crew, other than everyday walkers to watch out for. And remember, we still have not found out whose helicopter that was from the previous episode. Could that helicopter be connected to the next adventure after Negan's defeat? Looking forward to both Fear the Walking Dead as well as the return of the Walking Dead.
All right, Gary, thanks a lot for that. Couple things I wanted to comment on. I clearly think that if Daryl hadn't done what he had done, things would be in a much better situation. I don't think that that they would have gotten out. I think that, you know, they were kind of kept at bay. And the fact that they were, you know, with the walkers inside the sanctuary, that gave the saviors a chance to do whatever that they wanted to do and, you know, limited what the snipers were going to be able to do to stop it. So I tend to think that things would be much different if they hadn't done that stupid stunt. You make a really good point about the vehicles, because after you said that, I have to wonder myself. You would think that the gang, I'll just call them the gang, or what do you call them? AHK last episode, AHK. Always thought that Hack would have been better, HAK. But you would think that Hack would have hacked the tires of each and every vehicle at the sanctuary that they would have had access to. But either those vehicles were at a place where they couldn't get to them, somehow inaccessible in the grounds or just otherwise in an area that they couldn't get to, or, again, a certain missing piece of the plan. You know, a certain flaw in the plan. As far as, I don't think we're going to see an end of the war, in the mid-season premiere. I think it's going to end up going all season. What do you guys think?
No, I'm in complete agreement with that. I don't think we're going to see a resolution in the finale or in the premiere. I think it's going to go, as you mentioned, I think it's going to go till the end of the season, if not even longer.
No, I think that he's got a good, story coming in what I'm hoping is going to be his last episode. Like, he may be in flashbacks or something like that, but you know, I don't want to see Carl dying in the second half and it drag on and on and on. Because for me, his whole, I should have mentioned this in the weak sauce, exactly how long did it take for his bite to start giving him infecting it? Because that seemed like a lot of time would have had to have passed. You know?
Hey, well, Troy would know.
What's that? Sorry?
Oh, I said, hey, Troy would know.
Oh, Troy would know.
And Ben, you'll have to just watch season 3 to get that.
Yeah. I think we kind of narrowed it down. I don't know if you guys are aware, but I think the bite happened with the fight or the struggle with him and Sadiq in episode 6.
Yes. Yeah.
I think you're right.
It definitely did. But my point being that how much time elapsed from the time that he got bitten there to coming home, to writing a bunch of letters, to Negan showing up, to them evading and ending up in the sewer. It seemed like a lot of time passed there. And I would have thought that his symptoms would have gotten hold of him faster than that. I don't know.
Well, it seems like it's been half a day. And I remember when Jim got bit in season 1, it took him at least a full day. And he hadn't even died by the time they dropped him off.
Well, I think that's another element of weak sauce that can even be brought up and discussed at a later time, too, is sometimes the timeline of this show seems very confusing. We don't know how much time has passed between particular events. You know, we don't know if this whole attack that Negan is bringing upon these people has been within a day of them or it's been within an hour of them, you know, breaking in with the garbage trucks and letting the walkers through. There's nothing to indicate how long it's been. And I think that gets a little confusing at times, too.
Yeah, I think the whole half season occurred over 2 days. So I don't know. But like, I've looked at the Walking Dead Wikia, and they have a timeline there, and I've poked a lot of holes in that timeline. But the point being that who really knows how much time has passed? Some people think that less than 2 years have passed. Others think that 5 years have passed. I don't know. I wish they would define that better. And I'm hoping that if both shows do some kind of time jump and end up roughly in the same point, that we'll finally know exactly how much time has elapsed. And, you know, we can move on from there.
Well, it also doesn't help, too, that you have Judith, who seems like she's 3 or 4 years old at this point, and Maggie, who's been in her first trimester for, like, 2 seasons.
I know. And you know, she doesn't even have a baby bump yet.
No, she's not even showing yet.
I'm just guessing. She must be before 3 months, because you usually start showing in your 3rd month.
Yeah, so in other words, you know, less than 3 months have passed since the beginning of season 6. And for that matter, I guess the end of season 5, right?
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know. That seems, Carl has grown considerably over that time. Shot up like a weed.
He has.
And to that end, I have something to say when we get to our feedback about Carl. All right, let's move on.
Okay, so Todd Schwartzberg says, well, the episode was dark and slow all over the place. Morgan was there for a split second, even though he had nothing to do with the episode. I still don't know if this person, I guess he thought we were covering it up, but Carl, will be dead when it picks back up. Could be pulling a Glenn under the dumpster. Either way, how did the injury even happen? I fell asleep watching. I mean, it was 3 a.m. when I decided to watch, but I feel it could have happened to anyone. I kind of liked what Carl tried to do with his plan, even though it didn't quite work in the Negan scene. The Rick-Negan fight was almost cool, and then Rick bailed. So there's that. Episode was kind of meh. Todd didn't like it that much.
Yeah. Well, I hope that there isn't a dumpster kind of thing, because I don't think that there is going to be, just based on Gipple's cryptic comments. But although he was sort of cryptic, he did kind of answer the fact that it is a bite and things will progress like other bites do. So to me, that means in Gipple's non-direct way, yes, he's been bitten. Yes, he's going to die, but he's not dead yet.
I'm not dead.
Yeah.
He says he's not dead.
Yes, he is.
I'm not.
I'm definitely not watching that movie. I'm definitely watching that movie when we're done recording.
All right. Next is from Cheryl. She says, and I want to thank Cheryl again for compiling the feedback this week. I find it interesting that Daryl and Tara's discussions centered around if they screwed up the plan or not. Flash, they did. I don't think they helped it much. At least we know that Eugene was the instigator. Even though Eugene was also the one that gave quote-unquote information to Father Gabriel about how to get out, Eugene has a conscience, but doesn't know what to do with it. He worries too much about what others think. Genius to be in the sewers. Well done, Sadiq. Yeah.
I will say I don't know about Daryl and Tara. Until I know what Rick's plan was, I'm not going to fully say that they screwed it up. I mean, from what they were saying with the group, it was Eugene. I mean, from what the saviors were saying to the group, it was Eugene who got them out. And so I'm not going to fully throw them under the bus until I find out what Eugene's plan was and what Rick's plan was.
Yeah, I think we kind of know what Rick's plan was, but as you know, I've said, certainly not everything was thought out, like what to do with prisoners, you know, what to do with people that surrender, what to do with, how do you make sure that they do want to give up?
Well, I think that's mainly because with the pressure they were under, Rick was pretty much taking a shoot first, ask questions later kind of approach to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't communicate that to his team, apparently, because they had a lot of moral dilemmas.
Yeah.
All right, next.
We have feedback from Dieta. She says, I knew those damn trash people couldn't be trusted. They ran so fast and left Rick high and dry. They need to die. Enid killed the Oceanside leader. What are they going to do with Aaron and her? I'm still not understanding why there are not any dead saviors. All that shooting and killing and not one dead main savior. Overall, decent episode. I hate that we have to wait a little longer for it to return in February.
Yeah, Dieta, and you brought this up in your weak sauce, I think. The fact that all the saviors that die, both in this episode and, you know, earlier, are saviors that we don't know. You know,
yeah.
So I think that that is a weak point. And certainly we should have seen somebody in that group, like especially, you know, with Dwight there, someone that we knew that died. So,
Jared.
What's that?
Jared.
Oh, yeah.
Weasel-faced Jared.
Yeah, he's long due. All right.
Whitney says, I thought they did a good job transitioning back and forth between characters and what's going awry within each of their storylines. It was uncomfortable, unsettling to watch, yet that's by intent. It gave me, and I'm sure everyone, flashbacks to the season 6 finale when the saviors were there at every turn, blocking our group and reeling them in. From the start, I wondered about Carl, from the letter he wrote, to the flashback conversations with Rick, to his conversation with Negan saying, kill me. Near the end of the episode, when he was close to one of the explosions inside Alexandria, he looked as pale as he did after getting shot by Otis in season 2. The camera didn't pan down much below his waistline in part of it, so I fully wondered, expected, something bad had happened. Were we about to see Carl with a gaping wound? All the signs were there, but I didn't expect a bite until shown at the end. What a shocker. I didn't think they'd have Carl die. I read in an article over 6 months ago with the writer questioning how long Carl would remain on the show, especially now that he's a college-aged young man. Maybe there's truth to that, but still, he'll be greatly missed.
Yeah, one of the things that I heard is that Chandler Riggs had just bought a house in Sonoy to be closer to the set. And if anything, this kind of teaches Chandler Riggs a lesson, and that is if you're on a TV show where you could be killed at any time, you might not want to buy a house. Because I think Lori Holden did something similar, and she was written off too. So.
I think Emily Kinney also did the same thing. She had just bought a place before she got killed off.
And I think you had mentioned earlier that Melissa McBride also did the same thing too, but she's still active on the show, .. for now.
Yeah. In the case of Melissa McBride, though, she lived in Atlanta prior to The Walking Dead. So
okay.
She was a casting agent, actually, before she, you know, and she had acted as well, but that was her primary mode of income, I believe. She was a casting agent in the Atlanta area. So it's funny how things work. But so in her case, it wouldn't be as big of a deal. But Chandler, well, I think Chandler Riggs is also from Atlanta originally. So in his case, buying the house and not, you know, moving, like just moving down there, you know, renting a place or something probably would have made more sense. But I heard that he's now moved to California. So I guess he's pursuing roles in LA. And I know he's got some music that's out now under the name Eclipse. I have not listened to it. I'm not even sure where to buy it or, you know, stream it, but I have heard that he's got something out. So, you know, it's good that he's, you know, keeping himself busy and, you know, I think he's going to have a long career ahead of him if he, you know, plays his cards right. But it's kind of like, much like the character, you know, he got a life lesson.
Yeah.
And you were correct too. He's from Atlanta originally.
All right. Well, we have a poll. I actually put it out kind of late because we got quite a bit of feedback in the end, but for the longest time, it looked like we were going to have nothing. So I kind of like, oh, what do I do? So I put a poll together and it had to do with basically, you know, what did you think about how are you feeling about what happened to Carl? And, I put, you know, several things out there. Looks like one, thing got added. So the number one, I allowed people to, vote for multiple things here. But the number one was sad, and 11 people gave sad as their answer. 5 were confused. 3 are mad. 2 are happy. 2 are all of the above. That was a new one added. 1 is indifferent, and no one answered depressed, shocked, or amazed. So before we go into some of the feedback that we got from that, how are you guys feeling about it?
I'm not sad, to be honest with you. I really wasn't sad when I saw it happened. I feel for the state of Chandler Riggs himself, I feel like it sucks, but I feel like it's also could be good for him to not get caught up in this role for 10, 15 years and then not know anything. But I think he's at a perfect age, as you had mentioned earlier, to kind of transition out of this and transition into other work. So I think as an actor, this is a perfect time for this to happen to him. But as far as a character wise and story wise, I wasn't sad. I kind of predicted it being Carl from the beginning of the episode, the way the episode was started.
Carl. What about you, Laura?
I'm kind of with Ben, except that I'm indifferent into happy because I kind of knew, as well, as soon as he started writing the goodbye notes that something was probably going to happen to Carl. And, you know, AMC doesn't help out by telling us that we need to stay and watch the end of the episode because something crazy is going to happen. And then they send out a picture of what obviously looks like a zombie bite. So you know that something's going to happen at the end, probably a character death, and it's probably going to be from a zombie bite. So as soon as they started showing Carl with the goodbye notes, started making him this moral compass, you know, all the pieces fell into place. And I wasn't shocked and indifferent just because I like Carl, but I'm not so married to the comic book storyline that I have to have exactly what's in the comic. I actually like being a little surprised. So that's why it kind of moves a little for me into happy because it makes me feel like they might be brewing up some new unexpected storylines for the future.
Well, I would say that my complex emotions about this, this death that's about to happen, I was sad, shocked, amazed, and kind of happy. So I was all of those things. I wasn't confused or mad at all. I know some people are mad about it, really mad. But, you know, I'm sad to see him go. I am really surprised that they have done such a bold thing. You know, I did not see this coming. And at the same time, I'm really pumped and I would say amazed that they are going to do this. And I'm happy just because things are going to go different than the comic book. And I think in a lot of ways, this show has really shined when they haven't, you know, followed the comic book. I mean, if you think about it, Clear, The Grove, No Sanctuary, those are 3 that I can think of off the top of my head. are things that did not happen in the comic book, or they did not happen in that way in the comic book. And, you know, those are some of the best episodes of the show. So, again, here's not here, another one. So when they, you know, come up with original material, it seems to play off better than when they're trying to adapt. So, you know, that's why I'm kind of happy about it.
Right. And I would say I was maybe 15% mad because I thought the way they took him out was not great for a main character.
It could have been better. Reminded me a little bit of what they did with Tyrese. Mm-hmm. That bite that he got, and that just drove me crazy. I didn't like how they killed him off.
Yeah, it's a rookie move this far into the apocalypse.
All right. Ben, you've got some comments there?
Sure. One comment from Kathleen states that she was confused because The Walking Dead has always been, in her honest opinion, Carl's story. If they're pulling another Glenn and the dumpster stunt, I'm out for good. Yeah, I think I'm right there with her on that one.
And to that end, and I think Gary said something similar. I don't think that this is going to be a dumpster thing. You know, even though Gipple was his cagey self, you can imply that he is going to die, and it's probably going to be next episode, although we don't know that for sure, but that's kind of what was hinted at. Certainly he's going to be on Talking Dead when the show comes back. So I tend to think he's going to be dead by the end of that episode. So,
yeah.
And then Kyle, hi Kyle, our Fear the Walking Dead co-host, says, I say confused because it's a departure from the comics, and Baby Judith brings Rick's being Rick's new Carl has me not sure where this is going.
Yeah, Baby Judith being Rick's new Carl. I think that's funny. Reese, who I have to say, she called it. She mentioned this in our episode 69, where she thought that Carl may have been bitten in that whole skirmish, you know, with Sadiq. And it proved correct. So anyway, she said, I'm mad because getting a Walker bite while, quote unquote, releasing souls with a character nobody likes or cares about is such a disservice for a character that's been around since the beginning. And, you know, I mentioned to her that she did call it, and she said, I was hoping I was wrong. And unfortunately, you were not wrong.
Tilly Creary states that she's sad because the way Carl is leaving the show is bittersweet. And I agree with her on that point. They mentioned it on Talking Dead that the acting that has come out of Chandler Riggs in this episode is some of the best acting, not just for this episode, but for the series. And rewatching the episode, especially the scene with him and Negan, I agree with that statement completely. This might have been his swan song, but he went out on a high note as far as acting goes.
Yeah, I agree.
And GJ Koyanagi says, a very sad and tragic yet also heroic end for this character. Disappointed to see that Chandler Riggs is leaving the show, but intrigued and curious to see how this twist will manifest itself in the story and how it will affect all the characters, especially Michonne and Rick. Also angry for having it somewhat spoiled for me because of all the hype manufactured by AMC. I'm with you there, brother.
Yep, agree completely.
Yep. Malika, who was a guest host for episode 4. Hi, Malika. She says, it's almost like I don't care. Why the heck would they do this? No point. At least none that I can see. I watched it again this morning, and I can't even come up with anything really to say. The format of the episode was screwed up, as was the style. It just seems like the writers/directors/producers are just wasting time. For me, this was a huge letdown of an episode, 90 minutes of blah. Guess you didn't like it.
No. Dieta says, like I said, it was a shock. I don't think nobody expected it except maybe a few. Yet we knew somebody was going to die for the season finale, but did it have to be Carl? Why not one of the invincible saviors, only because they have not lost anyone except a bunch of red shirts? Another red shirts coming.
Yep.
I love it.
Sarah Norris says, I'm sad. I feel like this hits me harder than if Negan had killed him. At the same time, since Negan only indirectly caused the death, will it be harder for Rick to get vengeance? I don't even think he indirectly caused it. It was like completely independent of everything that's been going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if anything, he can hold it more resentment against Sadiq. Mm-hmm. If he finds out it was saving Sadiq that he got bit.
Yeah. I think, Sarah's looking at it thinking that, that he got bitten during the episode. And, you know, I don't believe that that's the case. He got bitten, while saving Sadiq, you know, so, all right. Well, anyway, let's move on to, additional discussion point. Ben, do you have anything?
I actually don't. I think everything I had made a note for of this discussion of this episode, I think we've pretty much covered in, whether it be Weak Sauce or Awesome Sauce, I think we've covered everything. I'll just wrap up my thoughts by saying that, you know, this death of Carl is something I didn't see coming, and that is something that intrigues me incredibly about the future of the show. And it might have actually saved me when it comes to watching. I was at the point where Walking Dead for 7 seasons has been appointment television for me. I've always watched it when it aired and never later, unless I absolutely had to. These past couple weeks, it has fallen out of that favor. I still watch it, but I didn't watch it when it was on. I watched it later because it kind of didn't hold the same importance to me. But now knowing that they're willing to break the format, might bring this back into appointment television for me again. So I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen when the show comes back after the midseason.
Cool. Before we get to your comments there, Laura, I want to take a minute to talk about Carl since you brought it up. I think one of the problems that they've had with Carl, I talked about this a little bit earlier, was his age versus Chandler's age. How old is Carl versus how old is Chandler? And I think that is really hit home in some of the interaction between Negan and Carl, and I have a clip for that.
Scorched earth, you dick!
He's not home.
Oh, holy sh! Everybody, hold your fire, it's Carl. Look at you, answering the door like a big boy. I am so proud. Daddy's not home, huh?
When he says answering the door like a big boy, I mean, okay, how old is Carl supposed to be exactly? Is he 14? Is he 15, 16, 17? Or is he 10 and just had a really early growth spurt?
See, I get the age. When I think of Carl, I think it was the first number you brought up. I think 14.
Yeah.
I think obviously Chandler is older than that, but the character of Carl, I think, no older than like 14, 15 years old.
But it's just odd the way that Negan talks to him like he's like a little kid, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, I think that's what we're supposed to believe, is that he's maybe 14, so he doesn't look like it.
No. All right, Laura, sorry to steal your thunder, but I wanted to play that. What you got?
I, you know, really agree with Ben that, you know, The Walking Dead is kind of slipping with me as far as appointment TV. When I sit back and look at the series that I've watched this year, it was not my number one, two, or three favorite season of the year. I mean, so far, it's only gone halfway, but I've had others that I enjoy more. But I don't like how they did Carl's death. I feel like he probably deserved better than a rookie move of a zombie bite for his death. But I am intrigued, and it has made it more interesting for me to come back in the new year and see how this is all going to pan out and how it may possibly change storylines. And my biggest hope is that it may change the storyline for a certain bad guy, because I don't want to give away comic book spoilers, but I think Negan is just still a horrible person. When he was talking to Rick and saying how he was going to cut him, like leave him out for the walkers until he's a bloody stump and kill him, I'm like, that is seriously psychotic. I mean, I'm sorry, but I don't know. I feel like Negan just has to die, and I'm just hoping there may be some deviation now that they're not afraid to stick to prescribed storylines. And then just small things, like maybe it wasn't a good idea for Erin to take Enid with him, but she's a bit, you know, trigger happy. When we've had all these other characters throughout the season afraid to kill any of the saviors, and she instantly shoots Grandma. Like, oh no, that was a bad decision, Erin.
Well, especially when Enid is told that they have no weapons all their firearms were taken by, you know, our people. So her shooting Natanya, kind of not the right idea, because we know that unless they pick some up somewhere, they don't have any guns of their own.
Yeah, I've never seen Enid be the type to just shoot first and ask questions later. But, you know, maybe she was just shocked. But that was a little bit of a bad move. Morgan has mage-like skills of teleportation. First he's with the Hilltop and he's fighting Jesus, and then all of a sudden we don't see him traveling or anything, but he appears at the sanctuary as one of the snipers, and then all of a sudden he appears again at the kingdom, you know. I'm like, ooh, that's how he's gonna get to Houston. Mage-like skills of transportation, teleportation.
Morgan's a Jedi.
He is. I just thought that was actually kind of funny. Like, wow, how is he just popping from here to there when it's taking Rick practically all day to drive from the sanctuary back to Alexandria? So, the slow motion effects, I agree with you, Ben. I just, Zack Snyder popped in my head, and you will get that. So, like, it's like one time's cool, maybe like half a dozen times, it's getting a little bit redundant. And the last thing is that, have you noticed? I noticed, especially in the beginning score, when Rick is with the Heapsters, that the score is kind of like a 80s John Carpenter score. I felt it was a little bit of a Stranger Things vibe going on there.
Yeah, we noticed that last week, too. It must be kind of something that they're playing with the Heapsters. I don't know.
There was it's a funny moment to anybody who has an Amazon Echo. There were certain parts in the score that sounded very similar to the alarm that my Amazon Echo gives off. So there were actually points during certain scenes, especially in particular with Dwight, I was turning around and looking, why is my Echo like sounding the alarm? And it wasn't. It was all part of the score. It had me confused a couple of times.
Interesting. Cool. A couple quick things. I have happened to notice Gavin, the reluctant Savior outpost leader. I have to think in a different reality, he would be part of our group. And I'm almost surprised, and maybe he will turn before the, you know, the war is out. But he just seems like he's not a ruthless killer. He's not a Simon. He's not a Negan. He seems very reluctant to have to resort to violence. And, you know, it's clear that I think he could have been a good guy if he had just, you know, ended up in Alexandria instead of in with the Saviors. I liked one thing that Simon said. He called them the masses of the cold and impolite. I thought that was kind of a nice little turn of phrase. Dr. Carson deals with Eugene the way that I think most of us would, in that he doesn't know what the hell he's saying. And we see Eugene taking wine shots, and I hate to say it, Eugene, but that's probably not enough to knock you out. The last thing is, I wonder if Laura, who's you may know better as the savior with the barcode tattoo, if she's actually going to give up Dwight, or is someone or something maybe that Negan does that's going to stop her, or she'll die before she can tell him or whatever. I kind of wonder about that.
Well, on that note, why isn't Dwight dead? You just witnessed Dwight murder like four saviors, and instead you shoot him in the arm.
Yeah.
Why would you not kill him right there?
Yeah. When I was watching it, I was thinking, man, if Dwight was real hardcore, when they were coming up upon the survivors and she knew it, she started questioning him, Dwight would have shot her right there. I mean, yeah. He planned on her dying anyhow in the ambush, so he would have shot her there and saved himself a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
He was so cold-blooded.
All right. Well, I think that's it. So we are going to come back with a few hiatus episodes, and probably during that, we will finally announce who the permanent co-host will be for Season 8B. But if you want to submit feedback, either during the hiatus or when we get back in February, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio. There is a SpeakPipe widget there. You can use that. There's also the voicemail, which is at 304-837-2278. Like most people, though, they go to our Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. And if you aren't a member, Negan says,
"Are you kidding me?"
So there's also our email, which is walkingdeadgsm@gmail.com. The deadline for submitting feedback normally is 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, the Tuesday after the episode has aired. However, depending upon who the permanent co-host will be, that may change. So we may record Monday nights. We may record later in the week. I don't know. That will all depend on who ends up being the co-host. So we also have our Twitter. That's at WalkingDeadGSM. If you want to help us out, subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or your podcast player of choice. And of course, on Apple Podcasts, and there are a few others, Stitcher and a couple others beyond that, have ways to rate and review. That helps get the word out that you like what we're doing, so other people will be looking for Walking Dead podcasts and find us and check us out. So anything you can do with that is helpful. There are ways to support the network as well in other ways, and that is if you go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support. You can also use to go to the various podcasts in the network, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/apple. That'll open up iTunes or Apple Podcasts, and you'll see all the shows in the network. So the next episode of The Walking Dead will be on February 25th. We don't know anything about it other than we know that Chandler Riggs will be a guest on Talking Dead that week. And we'll be back before that, as I said. So until next time, I'm Brian.
I'm Ben.
And I'm Laura.
And this is The Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.